Well, you're gonna laugh, but because of your podcast, we're positioned well. So I don't know how else to thank you, but thank you. Your podcast and your services are amazing, and I wish I could do more as far as working with you guys, but I haven't really. But maybe in the future, obviously. But once again, our family is grateful to you, and your services and your information is priceless. Thank you so much. Take care.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from 165 countries worldwide. This is your host, Jason Hartman. And before we do anything today, I want to encourage you. I want to recommend to you. I want to force you to go to your podcast platform and subscribe to my newest podcast, my most creative endeavor, my most innovative endeavor ever that everybody said was impossible, but I knew it was possible because, what is that great quote? Some see things as they are and say, why? I, on the other hand, see things as they are and say, why not? Something like that. I might have messed that quote up a little bit, and I cannot remember who to attribute it to, but it's famous. You've heard it, and you've probably heard the more correct version than I have. But anyway, you gotta go and subscribe to Jason Hartman's Property Cast. It's super cool. Yes, super cool, where you can get our properties on an RSS feed on your podcast. I get them right on my iPhone. It's pretty darn awesome. PDA, pretty darn awesome. Yes, PDA, personal digital assistant. Remember those? Yeah. The Apple Newton, the Palm Pilot. The PDA, yes, the PDA revolution. Now we all have PDAs, but we don't call them that. We just call them phones, smartphones. But yes, you can get the Property Cast if you go and subscribe for free on iTunes or whatever your podcast platform is. You look up Jason Hartman's Property Cast. Property Cast, it's one word. You will get the first year projection performas right on your device. As soon as we post them, they will be in the feed. And we've got about 50 episodes, and I'm saying episodes in quotes, on the Property Cast feed right now. 50 properties you can buy. Yes, you can. It's just super cool to get them right there. You don't even have to go to our website anymore. How convenient is that? Our goal is to just make your life more convenient. Okay, so subscribe to the Property Cast. Check it out. It's different. There's no audio. There's no video. There's just PDFs of properties. Yes, properties to invest in. It's pretty great. Pretty great stuff. So that is the before we do anything. Today, we're going to talk about best practices of ultra-wealthy investors and family offices. So you all know what a family office is. We talked about that before. We are going to talk about that with our guest today, Richard Wilson. He is a returning guest, so we'll hear what he has to say in just a moment. But first, I want to talk to you about something you hear discussed quite a bit, and that is interest rates. But I want to talk about a particular type of interest rate. And it isn't an interest rate in the typical sense that you're thinking about. This is the interest rate, if you will, in the yield curve. You've certainly heard of the yield curve, right? And I was reminded of it because USA Today had a little article about it, and I was reading this, and I thought it was just a pretty good little summary. Now, remember, I have talked many times over the years about how we definitely were and may even still be in an era of negative interest rates. Negative interest rates. What does that mean? Well, you know I talk a lot about inflation-induced debt destruction. And when I talk about that, we have to look at how inflation diminishes the value of debt. But before we even get to my awesome discovery of inflation-induced debt destruction, we can just talk about the more simple concept of negative interest rates. And what that means is if you borrow money at 5% interest and the real inflation rate is 5.5%, then you are borrowing at negative interest rates. How negative is it? It's 0.5% negative, but it's really more. Because if the interest rate at which you borrow is tax deductible, that might take that 5% interest rate at which you borrowed on possibly that 3-decade-long fixed rate mortgage, that beautiful, gorgeous mortgage. Hey, the last episode was about debt, my favorite 4-letter word. But you know what I failed to say in that? By the way, let me just let you in on a little secret about what happens to me after I record an episode and I talk to you. I always think about, gosh, I should have said this. I should have said that. I forgot to say this. I should have told him that. Happens every time. I hate it. Getting old, you know, I can't remember everything anymore. Okay, so where were we? See, when I have a live audience, I have you to keep me on track. Here, I'm just sitting in my hotel room in Kansas City. Oh, by the way, yes, I'm in Kansas City, and I tell you something, I have got to take a shower. You're probably thinking, yeah, Jason, I can smell you right through my device. Take a shower. No, it's not for that reason. It's because I have spent a lot of my day with the slimiest, sleaziest, most sleazy people. Ugh. I gotta take a shower, okay? Because, God, what is it about this town? Now, listen, I don't want to pick on Kansas City because it is, well, I'm going to pick on it for a moment here. But first of all, they have great dog parks here. My dog likes Kansas City quite a bit because she has been to some awesome dog parks over the past few days. But, you know, we have dealt with several bad people in this town. I mean, is there something in the water here? Or have we just had the bad luck and the misfortune of running into all the sleazy people in Kansas City and the rest of them are all great? I don't know. It's been over the last, 12 years or so in this market? Maybe 10, you know, 14 years in the overall business. I've run into some sleazy operators here in this city, I'll tell you that. Now, maybe is it the mafia roots of Kansas City? Well, a lot of places had mafia roots, you know, it's not just KC. I don't know. I don't know what it is. But, hey, I hate to stereotype, but I got to tell you, we've noticed the trend, and I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, I got to take a shower. After this, I will take a shower. Okay, back to negative interest rates. So, if you borrow at 5%, and that 5% is tax deductible, and let's just round it off. I know it's not quite this way, but say your tax rate is 50% combined state and federal. I know it's going to be less than that. It'll be like 40-something if you're making a lot of money, right? You know, and it might be even quite a bit less than that. Your tax rate might be 30% or 35%, you know, state and federal combined. Maybe you followed my advice and you moved to a no income tax state like I did the last two times. I tell you, if I wasn't really so annoyed by income taxes, I might just move back to Arizona. I really liked Arizona. That was a nice place to live. You know, you live in Scottsdale, Arizona, it feels like you're living in a resort every day. Great place. Highly recommend it, but you're going to pay some taxes there. Not as bad as the Socialist Republic of New York and California. Yeah, I know. You thought I was going to say California first. There are quite a few socialist republics around the country with ultra-high taxes and big government, but lest I digress. 5% round figures, let's call it 50% combined state and federal taxes because you're making a lot of money. And that means your real interest rate on that 5%, if it's for your own home, the home in which you live, and the mortgage is not above what is the new limit on the new tax law, it's $750,000, right? So if that is your mortgage amount, borrow at 5%, you're really paying 2.5%. And if real inflation is 5.5%, you're getting paid 3% to borrow the money. That's a pretty good deal. That is pretty awesome. So that's negative interest rates. But then we have to look at the yield curve. And the yield curve tells us about how bond investors act, right? And remember, a bond is just a loan. That's all a bond is. It's the flip side of the coin, right? It's the other side of a loan. So think of a bond as just a loan. Back up a moment. Back up. What was that funny one with George on Seinfeld? He goes, you know, like the truck backing up. Anyway, back up a moment. If you believe in the concept I have taught you about of inflation-induced debt destruction, you would probably never buy bonds because bonds suck, okay? They're pretty bad. I mean, bonds are lame because bonds... Now, listen, if the environment is deflationary, your bond could be pretty good, right? But if it's inflationary, your bond is terrible, okay? Because bonds get beat to heck with inflation, right? So bond investors react to their view of the economy's future. And this is kind of chronicled in the yield curve, right? So let me just read you for a moment what USA Today says, and it'll set it up better. And then I'll, of course, have my brilliant commentary. Okay, yield curve has flattened significantly. Now, what they're getting at here is that this is a sign of the economy slowing, which I wouldn't completely deny, by the way. Okay? In some areas, there are definitely some signs. I mean, look, in the high-end real estate markets, it's getting pretty quiet. Play the cricket sound, Adam. Anyway, I hope my editor, our producer, put the crickets in there because that would have been funny. Okay, so question. I have heard economists talking about the flattening yield curve. What is the yield curve and what does it mean if it's flattening? Answer. A yield curve is the relationship between interest rates of bonds of different maturities that are in the same terms of credit quality. So if you take bonds that all have the same quality, like there's no junk bonds in there, right? They're all good quality bonds. In other words, the ratings agencies, not that you should trust them or anything, because we already know that lesson from the financial crisis. But assuming the rating agencies are legit and right, and the bonds are all of the same good quality, they have different maturity dates, right? Most frequently cited is that of the U.S. Treasuries, using the 3-month, 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, and 30-year treasury securities, right? So why should investors care? Well, it's not a perfect indicator by itself. The shape of the yield curve can give you an idea of the future health of the economy. There are 3 main shapes it can take. A normal yield curve is one in which longer maturity bonds have higher interest rates, right? Because, look, if you're going to lock your money up for a long time, this is me talking, I think you can tell when I'm reading and talking. If you're going to lock your money up for a long time, to be incentivized to do that, you've got to know that you're going to get a higher rate because there's going to be some inflation risk in there, right? If you essentially buy a bond, which is the same as loaning some money. It's the same thing, right? A bond is a loan. It's the flip side of a loan, right? So you've got to have a higher rate of interest on that bond, right? A normal yield curve is one in which longer maturity bonds have higher interest rates. See, that's normal, okay? This is generally a sign of a healthy or expanding economy. A flat yield curve is one in which long-term bonds have approximately the same yield as shorter-term bonds. This is often taken as a sign of an upcoming transition from expansion to recession or vice versa, right? Because it depends what side you're on. If you're in the recessionary side of the economy and you see a flattening yield curve, then you think, oh, well, you know, maybe things are going to expand again. If you're on the expansion side, you think the opposite, right? It depends. It's like saying, is the mirror, like, you know, those little mirrors you put on your car to see better or around the corner, you see them in parking garages and stuff, those convex mirrors, right? That means they're kind of the circle comes out, right? It's convex. If it's concave, means it goes in, okay? And so that would be the same way you look at the yield curve. It depends which side you're looking at it from, if it's convex or concave. Okay, so yeah, I just made that up. An inverted yield curve, now here's the third one. An inverted yield curve is one in which shorter maturity bonds have higher interest rates than longer maturity bonds. When the yield curve inverts, it's a pretty reliable indicator of an upcoming recession. So, what does that mean? Why would there be higher rates on shorter-term bonds than on longer maturity bonds? Well, because it's a sign that interest rates are rising, right? And so, when interest rates rise, the economy slows. Okay, it always does. That's, you know, if you want to heat up the economy, hey, throw some gas on the fire with lower interest rates. If you want to cool it off, throw some water on the fire, and the water on the fire is higher interest rates, right? So, you know, and it's not just interest rates, it's also tightening. And that's not exactly the same as interest rates. And it's also money supply. And, you know, this stuff is complicated. That's why we have to meet at least 3 times a week to discuss the whole thing, don't we? Okay, as of Monday morning, the yields of 5 Treasury bonds I mentioned were from the shortest to the longest maturity. I won't bore you with the numbers because you'll forget them anyway. Okay, this is still an example of a normal yield curve, but it has flattened in recent months. So again, normal, but it's flattening out a little bit. So it's something to look for and something to just be mindful of. But there's more to life than any economic indicator. There's more to life than the yield curve, isn't there? Why? Because, hey, there's all this stuff going on with trade and job creation, and the job creation is going marvelous. Wages are actually increasing in America for the first time in a long time in terms of real dollar wages. Americans, hey, congratulations. You're finally getting a raise. Thank you, Donald Trump. Oh, don't say that. You're going to get some hate mail. All right. So the yield curve. Makes sense? Capiche? Okay. Enough of that from your hack economist, Jason Hartman. All right. What else do we want to talk about here? We got to get to our interview, but I did have maybe another thing or two I wanted to just mention to you. Oh, Patrick, who was on the show recently, he posted in our content group today. Patrick, thank you for this. He says, now, Orange County, California, that's what he was talking about. I lived there almost all my adult life, okay? He said that we have the lowest demand in Orange County for the month of July since 2007. So there are definitely signs of a turn. There are definitely some signs that, you know, you need to be watching right now, okay? Another article here. This is a MarketWatch.com article. Mortgage rates climb as housing market loses its mojo. Well, what's the question you need to ask about that one? Just by seeing the title, you need to ask a question. And it's a question I have repeated often on this show. What is the question? The question is, compared to what? Compared to what, right? Well, I mean, if you lose a little bit of mojo compared to the insane level of mojo we've been having, that ain't bad. You know, speaking of mojo, it's like, you know, have you ever been at an event or something? I don't know, maybe a music event or something. Or no, better example is a sporting event or a sports bar. God, I hate sports bars. But I like hanging out with the guys just as much as the next guy. But sometimes, you know, it's like there's a little too much mojo around here, okay? So let's just chill out. I gotta get out of here, right? Because it's just too much. It's too, that energy is just too chaotic and too, it's just too much. It's too overwhelming, right? So you gotta get a break from it. So the housing market needs to lose a little mojo. Okay, I think that would be just fine if it would lose a little mojo. Hey, I have been quoted as saying, I'm looking forward to the next recession. And I hope I don't regret saying that, but a little cooling off would do me just fine. One of the other things I got to tell you I have been annoyed about, a little bit depressed about, actually. I was talking with one of our listeners, Sean, today. We exchanged several messages on Voxer about this. Hi, Sean. I know you're listening out there. Thank you for your thoughts on this, by the way. Is about how in good times, and these aren't even good times, these are great times in terms of, you know, everybody thinks a seller's market is a great market and a buyer's market is a bad market. That's a misnomer, but that's what people say. But every flake and jerk comes out of the woodwork in this kind of market, right? In this kind of economy. And the other thing is, and this just annoys us every day over here, as we try to keep our providers, our people that are selling properties to you in our network, and the property managers that are helping you manage them, we try to keep them in check, okay? So that it's a balanced relationship of customer versus vendor, right? We try to do that. But it is very challenging for us to do that in this kind of insanely insane booming economy, okay? Because, you know, people just, they just aren't very grateful. When money is being shoveled at them, they just don't really do the best to take care of their customers and go the extra mile. And God knows, you might want to return a phone call. You know, it's really something that we just spend a lot of time managing for your benefit. And well, and for ours, obviously. I mean, listen, this is not a charity, okay? We want to have happy long-term customers, and that's just sound business, right? And so, you know, it's very challenging. Now, cool the market off a little bit, and hey, suddenly everybody's attitude improves. They get a little more grateful. They get a little more service-oriented. They become a little more conscientious. I wouldn't mind it at all if that happened, okay? So that's the balance on it. Okay, hey, be sure to join us in Hawaii for Profits in Paradise. We got about 35 people coming already. That event is actually probably going to sell out. I'm going to call it now. I think it's going to sell out because of our size limitations. And by the way, we cannot expand our room for that two-day conference, Profits in Paradise in Hawaii in November, Waikiki Beach. We have got the largest room available at our facility. So it might sell out. I hope it will. We will see. But we, you know, we've got a while. We've got a couple of months here. So first week in November, Profits in Paradise, Hawaii, Waikiki Beach, and then Venture Alliance Retreat. Just skip a day in between, and we'll have a two-day Venture Alliance Retreat in Kauai, and that is a beautiful, gorgeous place. Hey, they're both beautiful, gorgeous places. So join us for that. Go to jasonhartman.com. Be sure you've subscribed to the Property Cast. I'm talking an awful long time. We'll get a little bit of the family office stuff and ultra-wealthy investors in here, and we will do that in two parts for you because I know, I promised you we were going to do that. So let me get some time on that in here, and we'll have part two on the next episode. It's my pleasure to welcome back a returning guest. It's Richard C. Wilson. He is an expert in family offices. And today we are going to talk about the best practices of not millionaires, not multimillionaires, not deca-millionaires, but centa-millionaires. That means over $100 million and up. We can learn a lot from what the wealthy people are doing. What are their fears? What are their worries? What are they really optimistic and bullish about? Let's go ahead and kind of dive in and see what Richard says. Richard, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Jason.
Good. It's good to have you on. So best practices of centa-millionaires. That's a great catch line. Take us through some of those best practices.
First off, there's well over 25,000 centimillionaires that, you know, are kind of tracked globally, and the number is only growing. So I see this as an important topic because everyone loves to talk about billionaires and that gets all the headlines, but no one ever talks about centimillionaires really. And there's many more of them that drive the economy. So a few of the best practices I wanted to get into were, I mean, one, a lot of them are creating single family offices and want to have a family office solution to help protect themselves and grow their wealth. That's obviously really central to, you know, the last interview that we did together. And then there's a number of business strategies that I found that these clients have kind of honed in and developed and have been key to them becoming worth $100 million plus. And so naturally, they want to use them even more and drive forward their wealth using those same strategies. If you want to, I could go into a couple of those kind of business approaches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Please dive in.
So first is just kind of a mindset of things being set up as a chessboard and not having a linear view of your business or your portfolio saying, well, we are in the event business, we offer events, or we are a consulting firm and we do consulting. Instead, they look at the business ecosystem and try to figure out how they can control or manipulate or be a part of multiple parts of it so that they might be able to reduce their costs or take the biggest bottleneck in their business and take it into a profit center, et cetera. So just the mindset of looking at your business in a really strategic way, or your portfolio of businesses in a really strategic way, is central to all of these other ideas. The second thing is that all of my clients are first-generation families. We work with over 20 different families that are worth $100 million or more. And these first-gen families are choosing to work. All of them could never work another day in their life if they wanted to. All of them outsource part of the management of their wealth, typically stocks and bonds or fund manager allocations, et cetera, to third parties. So, and if they wanted to, they could outsource everything and have all their wealth managed and live on a beach all day long. And when they get to that point of they're not working to pay a mortgage or not working for a retirement or to hit some, you know, really big number, they've already done that. They're really opting into working on things they either enjoy working on, they're excited to work on, and they have big strategic advantages of working on those things. They don't have to really do anything in their life. So I think that those two mindsets, approaching it like a chessboard and just being fully aware that these are families of, they're fully opted in to this is what we want to be doing with our time. Both, you know, they're passionate about it, but also they probably believe that part of a good defense in their portfolio on top of diversification or conservative cash flowing assets for part of their portfolio is a good offense, and where they have a marked advantage against the competition, whether it is having the reputation of being a titan in their industry or a local big player in the local geography of a certain industry, or maybe having distribution or information advantages that others don't have. And that's how they're able to propel their wealth forward even more. So those are a couple of things that kind of set up just kind of the boundaries within their thinking.
So the first thing you talked about, I mean, it behooves everybody listening, if they have a business or with their own investment portfolio, look up and down the supply chain. Of course, look laterally and look around the playing field and see how things might fit into the bigger picture, of course. And that makes a lot of sense. You know, there's a great story about the brand Soft Soap. And when that company was launched, their real key, you know, maybe you've heard this, it might be kind of trite, but one of their real keys to success was that they went and captured a bottleneck. They captured the pumps. They ordered a 2-year contract from the supplier of those pumps, and they were the only one that had the pump. And so competitors coming into the soft soap business, if you will, couldn't do it because nobody made the pump. And so that was the bottleneck, and they captured it and kept competition out for a while. Definitely looking up and down the supply chain is a good idea. Now, Richard, I don't want to go much further without just asking you to quickly define family office. You know, people are starting to hear about this term, but I find it to be rather recent that people have been throwing that phrase around. Is that true or not? I mean, is it sort of a more contemporary term? You know, and define what it is for people, if you would. What it really
sure
is.
Family office is a holistic, full balance sheet wealth management solution. And that's the definition of it. It's supposed to be more holistic, more full balance sheet. Anything that touches your balance sheet personally, the family office hopefully is helping orchestrate or connect or protect the client. And so there's really only two types too. It doesn't get much more complex from there. There's a single family office, which means that, Jason, if you sold everything that you have equity in and it's worth $80 million or $200 million, you might set up a single family office.
I wish. I'm not quite that rich, but I'm working on it.
Not yet. Yeah. But if you did sell it, then you might say, you know what, instead of joining Goldman Sachs or UBS or going to a multifamily office, which I'll get to in a second, let's set up, you know, 10 full-time employees, and we're just going to execute on the things where I think I have a big marked advantage. and we'll outsource some parts for stocks and bonds and equities, et cetera, but let's control everything internally, and it's just going to be a team managing my wealth. That is a single family office. A multifamily office is going to a firm that looks like a wealth management firm, a traditional one, but has more multi-generational planning, more trust in estate and tax advisory work, hopefully a little bit more help on the direct investment side, and is going to be helping more on the hopefully accounting, reporting, back office parts as well. But if you just take a normal wealth management firm, just think of it being more holistic, more full service, more comprehensive, then that is a multifamily office. And the reason that both exist, which is probably even more important than the definition, is that the wealthier you get, typically the busier you are, and the more people are pitching you things and coming after you, whether it's a IRS or government regulator or competitors or other people trying to get access to your calendar. So you get busier and busier, but as your net worth grows, one mistake is costlier and costlier. And there's so much complexity going on, you're more likely to make a mistake. So the ROI of just protecting yourself from reality of chaos going on around you can help pay for the cost of having a family office. And then just getting slightly better deal flow, making a wiser tax decision, making things run a bit more efficiently tax-wise and regulatory-wise, and reducing some chaos for you personally or perhaps some stress is really what produces a really big ROI for people that have a family office. Because a 1% mistake for someone worth $100 million, that could have paid for a few full-time professionals to just follow them around all day and make sure they don't make those types of 1% mistakes. Right. So it's a very simplified reason why you need to have a family office when you're worth a lot.
Right, right. Okay, good stuff. So you started off with saying instead of going to Goldman Sachs, so are wealthy people finding that they want to have more control of their portfolios? They don't want to risk handing over, you know, to some guy at Goldman, and then there's this huge conflict of interest always, because, you know, where are all the clients' yachts, as the old saying goes, right? Is that one of the big motivators, just control alone?
For sure. Control is a big motivator. I was on the phone today with a billion-dollar family who I'm meeting with next week in New York, and they're setting up a family office from scratch. And they're just concerned that the people giving them advice are the ones who benefit from advising them to put all their assets with them.
Right.
So it's kind of like if you don't know which way to turn for, let's say, life insurance, and you say, who do I know that knows a lot about life insurance? Good chances are that person sells life insurance for a living. And when you go to them, good chances are they're going to tell you, you should buy a lot of life insurance.
Right.
So people are afraid of that conflict, and they're afraid of getting taken advantage of, and they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. And they do want more control. A lot of these families, they created all their wealth through control. The last natural thing they would do is say, okay, well, now I'm 58. I had an exit. Now I just want to give away all my money to a private banker who's going to be managing it. And I hope they don't mess it up for me and lose it all.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, they created that wealth because they paid attention to it. Like Andrew Carnegie would say, put all your eggs in one basket and watch that basket. They were paying attention to it. So yeah, good stuff. This will be continued on the next episode. Thank you for listening and happy investing. Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.